doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
The US is totally invested in NATO because the US understands that NATO provides, look at Iran, 4,000 to 5,000 sorties from European bases to in the context of epic fury. The US could not have done this without Europe as a big power projection platform. And then NATO providing them the ability to strike deep, to control the major choke points of the world, to have industrial depth, to prevent the nuclear submarines from Russia ending up at the US shores. For all these reasons, the US is in NATO, not only to protect Europe, but also because there is a direct interest for the United States itself.
Yeah, but he says that NATO hasn't been there for America, you know, over Iran, for example. He says NATO is a paper tiger.
There is disappointment, and I discussed this last week again with him in the White House, but I also pointed out to the fact that these are isolated cases and that when you look at the overwhelming picture, 4,000 to 5,000 planes taking off from Bucharest to the United Kingdom, to France, to so many other countries in Europe, basically implementing the bilateral basing agreements these countries have with the US.
We have to be open to the possibility that this will be defined as a watershed, not a blip. And that's because there is no such thing that two countries' interests are fundamentally aligned in every way. 20 years ago, two very important American scholars, international relations, realist thinkers, Stephen Walt and John Mearsheimer, wrote the book about the Israel lobby. Their long essay, they turned it into a very important book, and they really put a microscope under what is going on here. There's the material nature of the relationship, there's the assistance America gives, there's the moral arguments which don't stand up to scrutiny, and then, crucially, there's the American interest argument, that the way the relationship plays out doesn't serve American interests. And if that was true 20 years ago, it is even more the case today. And you look at this Iran war, right? It's very hard to, in retrospect, but it was predictable at the time, to see how can this serve America's interest. And yet, the attempt by the Israel lobby to constantly double down on, we're going to get more from America, we're going to pull you into things that are even more directly against your interest, we're going to be even more blatant in how we try and control and police debate on this issue, this weaponization of anti-Semitism. The Israel lobby keeps doubling down on a brute force politics. As we speak, there are primaries, each party deciding who its candidates are going to be in certain seats that are contested. And in those primaries, you have this flood of pro-Israel money, often dark money, often being hidden, often backing candidates where all the money is pro-Israel money, but they're not allowed to mention the word Israel because they know how unpopular it is. So all of these things are going on simultaneously. This weaponization of anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is real. What people claim is anti-Semitism undermines the seriousness of addressing the issue because they are trying to put anything that fundamentally challenges Israel's policy, Zionism as an ideology, like any ideology, it should be open to scrutiny. It's led to decades of no peace, decades of displacement of Palestinians, decades of instability in the Middle East. I don't think it's actually delivered better security for Jewish people, whether in Israel or overseas. So all of these things should be interrogated. But the Israel lobby keeps doubling down on a brute force politics. J.D. Vance is doing this in the context of someone who is trying to set himself up to be a presidential candidate, right? We're in 2026, in about a year's time less, we will be in the primary season. Assuming Trump doesn't try to get a third term, you'll be looking at who is going to be the GOP nominee to run in 2028, and Vance certainly sees himself as a viable candidate. So he's also doing this because he thinks it's good electoral politics. I mean, that's quite remarkable. If Trump sent him out on what he would consider to be a political suicide mission, if Trump said, listen, you're the guy to go out and play to the MAGA base, I know this is going to kill you politically, but you have to do it. It doesn't feel like that, right? It feels like Vance is doing this because he thinks it can serve him politically. We see the public opinion polling quite dramatic shifts amongst the Democrat electorate of things that we just never see. Swings of 40, 50% against Israel. You've just been live streaming war crimes and genocidal acts in Gaza. That's going to affect your reputation, especially when you then send spokespeople out into the international media who are so unconvincing, so unserious, so inhumane, actually. We also see it happening on the MAGA side. And whereas the trend among the Democrat voting has been a long ongoing trend that's just reached a certain point now, it feels like a point of no return. Again, I don't want to get carried away with myself because how Israel and its lobby are able to play in American politics is not going to be a thing that unravels overnight. But the thing that we maybe didn't see coming was on the Republican GOP MAGA side. You essentially have a civil war inside MAGA, right? There's much more invective, there's much more vituperative, aggressive language being exchanged between Republicans, Republican on Republican conflict, than there is between Republican and Democrat, because the America First wing of MAGA is at war with the Israel First wing of MAGA. Israel First seemed to win. The pendulum now seems to have swung back to the America First wing. You know, Tucker Carlson and Mark Levin going at it. Those who are questioning whether the way it does Israel politics is good for America, not only scoring points, but they are gaining a significant following. Their arguments are very compelling. You even have a challenge to what was holding this together, which was a version of Christian theology. End times dispensationalism in the evangelical community is the strongest base of support for Israel in the US. But that is now being challenged even on theological grounds, as in you are misreading the scripture in what you are saying. That's the civil war that's going on. And Vance has just put his thumb down on the scale in a very clear way. And I think we will wait and see whether that side of the argument wins.
I am very happy to see a ceasefire, and I'm hopeful that it holds. We have a tendency to forget that any war primarily the burden is borne by regular people, just folks who are just trying to live their lives and look after their families. And so if we can stop fighting in the region, that's good for the people who live there. If the Strait of Hormuz reopens, hopefully over time, that provides ordinary folks some relief from high gas prices and energy prices. A lot of the work we do as a foundation, we're nonpartisan, you know, we don't electioneer, but we are constantly on the lookout for this new generation of talent. How can we throw a spotlight on the great work that they're doing? How can we encourage them to get to know each other across the country and also across the world so that together they can, and by the way, those young people, they also know how to work social media better than some old guy like me, right? So I think we're in a transition period where there are a lot of Barack and Michelle Obamas out there doing cool stuff, but politics hasn't quite given them the
space
platform yet.
Okay.
Media hasn't shined a spotlight on them yet. If we can help focus on the great work they're doing, then that's one of our core missions. But in terms of what was the original rationale for this war, which was there was a deal in place in which Iran had agreed not to develop nuclear weapons, that the entire international community, including Israeli intelligence, our own intelligence agencies assessed, was working. This administration, or a prior version of this administration, pulled out of it, which caused then Iran to develop more nuclear capacity. We've now fought a war, spent billions and billions of dollars, put enormous strain on our military. A lot of people have died, and it feels like we're back where we were before we started the war, except maybe a little bit worse off. And my understanding is that the ceasefire says we've now got 60 days to develop a plan to deal with the nuclear issue, but we don't know yet what that plan is. So until there's some public document that indicates exactly what the agreement is, I have no way to compare it to the plan that we had put in place. Yeah. Well,
welcome back to the Skiff. Thanks for joining us this morning. Wow, the cockroaches are coming out as we approach the midterms. The old liar in chief, the man who ran a coup against the U.S. government, and the man who put in all this fraud mechanism where we're seeing hundreds of billions of dollars being looted from the U.S. Treasury, the taxpayer, from you, is out there trying to lecture us. We are approaching some kind of shift, in my opinion, or not shift, but inflection point. Which way this country is going to go. And today's show is focused on how you can help and what you need to know about that inflection point that is coming. Want to say hello to the crew in the chat. Thank you so much. We're getting so much engagement across the whole social media graph. We really appreciate it. Check out whatfinger.com. They post a lot of our content. Great aggregator site. I've got a hell of a show for you today. I've got Pastor Jake Dale, a friend of the show, who is going to discuss how we're taking back the mainline churches. And he's got a new book out, and I really want to let you hear about that. And then second hour, we've got Roger Stone, who's going to talk about a lot of things. J.D. Vance, who you heard in the cold open, Richard Nixon, elections, and influencer disclosures, which are coming as well. So much to talk about. I want to do the mission brief real quick. Today is the last day of June, June 30th. I'm your host, L. Todd Wood. Here's your mission brief. The DOJ is probing Roy Singham, the Indian oligarch who lives in China, for his NGO network of destruction across the United States. Miles Guo sentenced for fraud for taking down the CCP, or is he a grifter? We have the truth. Lisa Cook stays at the Fed for now per the SCOTUS. We'll see if that continues, but right now she's safe. The Secretary of the Army going to secret summits with Peter Thiel to discuss World War III. Wow. And what's going on with JD in Israel? We'll talk about that with Roger Stone. So much to go through. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
I'm a naturopathic doctor. We are in the world of medicine, very acquainted with many modalities, but probably the one most familiar with everybody would be two things: homeopathy and herbs, mm-hmm. Maybe some nutrients too, you know, vitamins, minerals, that kind of thing. Now, we do know a lot about the drugs because we have to find out what drug you're taking affects you and what nutrient it depletes you of, because they most every drug pharmacy product will deplete something. So we have been trained, and we have a database that we can check into that says this is going to take your B12 away. The pharmaceutical company cannot patent organic substances made by the body. You're not born short of Advil. You know, you're not born short of Ritalin. Yeah. You can be born short of insulin, right? Mm-hmm. The answers to staying healthy and keeping away from even SARS or any of those things getting into you, staying healthy. Mm-hmm. You and I get sick because our terrain gets out of balance. Well, that's the same thing in the soil. You and I are made from this thing called dirt. And when we get out of balance, we have the same thing happen. Weeds start to grow in our body. Right? And that's what we want in our body. We want nutrients that we don't understand how to get well enough yet because our suppliers are lacking knowledge and nutrient density foods. So
what this is what drove you to develop this was your knowledge of this, right?
Right. You know that.
I'm excited to announce that we're having a huge sale on Overstock and brand new products. For example, MyPillow Percale bed sheets, every color, every style, every size, only $29.88. Our Percale bed sheets are breathable, cool and crisp, and they're perfect for spring and summer. And check out Rev 7, the next generation of energy drinks. It tastes great, and it gives you energy all day with no jitters and no crashes. Best of all, it's actually good for you. And for a limited time, try our 3-pack absolutely free. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to save 20% on our Rev 7 12-packs or try our introductory 3-pack absolutely free. And our Percale bed sheets, all sizes, only $29.88. Twin size, full size, queen size, king sizes, all $29.88. Inventory is extremely limited at this price, so order now.
All right, we've got a lot to get through today, but one of the issues that really has been disturbing for me as a lifelong Presbyterian, my father was a Presbyterian minister, I can trace our lineage all the way back to Scotland, and has been the destruction of the mainline Protestant churches, at least I should say the infiltration. The buildings are still there, but the message has been corrupted in many of them, not all of them, but a lot of them. And that's been something that we've been talking about for some time now. We've been traveling to Armenia, Beirut, Ukraine, and other places to discuss the global Christian community. And that is happening. There is a unification going on, I think, globally. But the Protestant churches in America have remained on the sidelines, but that's not everywhere. Our good friend of the show, Pastor Jake Dell from Woodbury, Connecticut, if you're in the area, please go visit his church. And I'm sure he has an online presence as well. But I want to bring him in to talk about this. Pastor Dell, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. So I saw, we'll get to your book in a minute, but I mentioned an awakening or a unification happening with Christianity globally. Do you feel that in your position?
Yes, and I think that's, you know, part of one of the great doctrines that come out of the Protestant Reformation was the was spiritual unity of all believers, the priesthood of all believers, the doctrine of the invisible church. Not to diminish the doctrine of the visible church, which is what my book is about, but the invisible church is always a living reality, and I think you're sensing that.
Interesting. It's almost like it's some bigger force, obviously, than just humans doing it. It seems like the church is really coming together. Maybe it's just because I travel to all these different places and I see it happening and people communicating and all of that. And people from the Levant, where Christianity was born, really wanting to rediscover that and make sure it stays there and to grow that community. But what are you seeing in the great state of Connecticut, the cradle of liberty, where there's not so much liberty these days? What do you see happening in your environment?
Well, I see a resurgence among clergy, pastors of churches, pastors of old historic churches, but also new ones as well, coming together, realizing that they have to regrow their political muscle. And the last couple of weeks, I think, have been just, you know, headlines in Connecticut about why that's necessary. And I think that, you know, the Democrats are largely a group we can't really speak to anymore, but the Republicans we still have access to, and some of us pastors are making our voices heard.
Well, that's good to hear. So you're seeing it not, I mean, you've been a kind of a lone voice in the wilderness, that you see that growing in Connecticut.
I see it growing. I see other pastors, you know, some are not as willing or as able to take the limelight the way I am, but they're working behind the scenes. They're talking to the elected officials in their towns and at the Hartford. They're organizing, you know, meetups of other pastors. There's something called the Republican Assembly, which is a national body. We're organized here in Connecticut. I'm president of the Litchfield County chapter. Vice president is another pastor. So it's happening.
So that's really an issue. Are you seeing pushback or support from the GOP in Connecticut on that?
It's a bit of both. The GOP, like it is everywhere, is, you know, kind of at war with itself and sorting itself out, you know, what it's going to be.
What's the feedback from your congregation when you're moving really in this, I would say, I don't want to say political direction, but you're speaking out to issues that you see in the community? What's the reaction?
Well, I have a lot of support from my congregation, and that's largely due to a unique dynamic that I get into in the book, which is that this congregation is over 350 years old, but it was on the brink of closing 6 years ago. So I didn't have a lot of membership to work with when I came. And so a lot of the people, most of the people that have joined since then have come under in response to my preaching. So there's a lot of unity, and that's a blessing.
That's really interesting. Is it just your congregationalist? Is it just your denomination, or are you seeing it in some of the other mainline churches?
I'm seeing this movement take root in other denominations, particularly in the Episcopal Church and in the Presbyterian Church.
Interesting. Good, good. Well, tell us about the book. What made you write it, and what is it? What are people going to get out of it?
Well, I think it's one of those things where I couldn't have written it until I got to this point in my life. If you ever sit down and you say, I'm going to write a book and nothing happens, that's a good indication you should just wait a little bit longer. So I got to my early 50s and realized I finally had the book in me. Earlier this year, a friend of mine said I should write it. And what it's called Exile and Return. And it's the story of my exile from one mainline Protestant denomination, the Episcopal Church, and my return, to my surprise, to another one, the United Church of Christ, which is my current congregation's affiliation. So they couldn't get rid of me, right? I just kept coming back. So that's the return part of it. But it's a memoir, and it's meant to be moving. It's meant to tell the personal story, the things I did right, the things I did wrong. But also, it's a look inside the institution, particularly the Episcopal Church, how it works. And how it worked, especially over the last three decades, to really make sure that conservative, biblical, and orthodox voices like mine were suppressed or sidelined.
Mm-hmm. It really has been one of the most impacted denominations. We have another father down, Episcopal priest down in Atlanta, who Troy Beecham, who was forced out of the church. Mm-hmm. And he has medical issues. He has Parkinson's, and the church actually tried to even take his medical care away.
Yeah.
It's really, I mean, you see that in a lot of these organizations that have been infiltrated with more this Marxist orientation, that there's punishment if you go against, you know, the regime.
That's right. Felt there that? Is.
Yeah.
Certainly, I felt that, and became very explicit after 2020. It was building from 2018 on. When I joined the Episcopal Church in college back in the early 90s, I was confirmed in the Episcopal Church, and that's when I first started to explore a vocation in it. Places like the Northeast were pretty much locked up. They were, if you were conservative, you were not going to get through, but there was still quite a lot of variety and difference of opinion. The Episcopal Church was truly a big tent, I would say, through 2008, 2009, and then there was a split. So my book is positioned in something that's a larger movement called the Reconquista, which is really the brainchild of Redeemed Zoomer, 23-year-old man now, who started this about 4 years ago when he was, just graduating high school. He now has 700,000 followers on YouTube, and I've been tracking his movement for the last 3 years and really helping to establish a foothold for that movement in the Episcopal Church and in the United Church of Christ. The Wall Street Journal ran an op-ed in its Houses of Worship's column last Friday profiling the movement. So what we're seeing is that the liberal progressive establishment in the mainline churches has really peaked, probably peaked around 10, 15 years ago. And it's largely old people at this point, and younger radicals, millennials who are, you know, transgender, pushing the LGBT agenda. And it's, but it's in your neighborhood church, if you walk in, you're going to meet 10 people, you know, 15 people who are old and tired. God bless them. They don't know what to do. These are churches that are ready to be reclaimed for their biblical purpose, for the original intent of their founders, frankly, for the original intent of the gospel in Jesus Christ. Certain denominations are going to be harder than others. The Episcopal Church is harder than the Congregational Church because of the way it its government works. In the Congregational Church, every congregation is autonomous, but it's possible, it's doable. But what we're up against is an agenda that wants to see these churches closed and the land sold, or have the churches repurposed for low income, quote unquote, low income housing. We're seeing that happen in Connecticut as zoning laws are just being railroaded through, that towns are losing home rule. So now if you've got a closed church on Main Street, you don't have to get a zoning variance. You don't even have to go to the town anymore. As of right, you can simply, you know, put in a 10-unit, multi-unit apartment building in there without any regard for traffic or parking or what it will do to the neighborhood character.
Yeah, no, it's horrific. The zoning issue is really a sneaky way they've come in to destroy, I think, the communities. I mean, that's the intention, to make it, you know, you live in the pod and eat the bugs.
That's right. Well, and they destroyed the churches first, and that's why 30, 40 years later, this can happen.
So I, you know, I was talking, not me, but a friend of mine was talking to Catherine Engelbrecht, who started True the Vote. And one of the comments she had was, you know, we don't need more patriots. We need more believers. And that's, it seems to me that Christianity is the only way through this. I was talking with a Ukrainian friend of mine. He's just torn up over essentially Christian fighting Christian in Eastern Europe, and the death and the destruction of and depopulation and ethnicity of his whole world. I mean, and I just said, look, man, the only way through is through faith. I mean, what do you see that?
I do see it. And, you know, there's, especially online, you've got the trad Catholics, the ortho bros, the you know, radical Protestants or the Reformation guys. And, you know, some of those debates are, I'm certainly willing to have an argument with anyone about, you know, the solas, the principles of the Protestant Reformation, but we have to get on the same team here, because if you look at what's happening just, you know, 80, 90 miles down the road from me in New York City, let's build a coalition here, people.
So true. We want to help you with that with our Connecticut paper to Connecticut Sentinel. By the way, you're going to have an article on your book up there soon. So if you're in Connecticut, we'll put it on the main global channel as well. What's the name of the book, by the way?
It's called Exile and Return, and you can pre-order it now at exileandreturn.com. And the pre-orders are what's going to help me get it published. So buy one, buy two to give to a friend.
Well, we have a publishing company if you ever need a publisher.
I appreciate that.
Throw that out there. Episcopal Church, it's the Church of England, that, you know, and I've seen that MI6 and a lot of this globalist stuff is coming out of the City of London and that whole, in the monarchy and all that. They're very involved in Ukraine. Do you think that had an impact? Is why the Episcopal Church has been so impacted, or do you know anything about that?
You know, I don't have any direct knowledge of that. I'll just remember a line I saw in the show The Americans, which I'm sure you're familiar with, where there was a whole character was having her faith moment, and the two communist parents couldn't understand it. And there was one phone call where the father says to one of his KGB handler, can you do anything about this? And he says, oh yeah, we completely own the seminaries. And I think that's probably true.
Wow. In Connecticut, you know, I had been told, I don't know if it's true, that when the, you know, my family got off the boat in Middleton, they're all buried over there in the 1600s, 1700s, but and then they moved down to Mississippi, and that's kind of where the Presbyterian Church went south. And then I think the Northeast is more Congregationalist, but I've seen the PCA, Presbyterian Church of America, is really biblically focused, kind of planting churches all over Connecticut. Have you noticed that?
Well, there's a couple of longstanding plants here, and one in New Haven, and yes, they're certainly active. It's still, you know, I'd still say we haven't got our large number of independent churches, charismatic churches, Southern Baptists. It's a mix. There is faith in Connecticut, believe it or not. It's just not always in the churches you'll see on Main Street.
Well, you can bet that if you drive by an Episcopal church, there's an LGBT flag in the window.
Almost certainly.
What's next for you? What does your future look like?
Well, I mean, we are, you know, growing the church here in Woodbury. So my plan is to stay put and continue to tend this vine that God has planted me in.
Wow. So anything else you want to get out to people before I let you go?
Just really, you know, I think the book will be a useful manual, it's not just the story of my life, which I think is interesting, but it's actually a roadmap for, if you feel called to go back into one of these churches, maybe you grew up in one, or maybe you've always wondered what goes on in there, or maybe you just think it's beautiful and you don't want to see it turn into a condominium. Mm-hmm. The book has a manual, a whole blueprint for how to do that, and how to join a larger movement that's doing just that.
And it's called Exile and Return, and exileandreturn.com. That's where they
go. That's right. That's right.
Thank you, Pastor. We'll see you again soon. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Every day, your data is being tracked, collected, and sold, often without you even realizing it. Big tech companies control your devices, your apps, and the information you share. From your messages to your browsing habits, everything is being monitored and stored. Over time, we've traded privacy for convenience, and most people don't even question it. But what if you could take that control back? That's where Mark 37 comes in. Mark 37 provides privacy-focused phones, laptops, and tablets designed to give you full control over your digital life. With secure systems, expert support, and simple tools, they make it easier to step away from constant tracking and data collection. Because privacy isn't just a feature, it's a fundamental choice. It's about protecting your data, your freedom, and your future. Take back control of your digital life with Mark 37.
And by the way, I wanted to say I'm starting my journey with Sean. I'm going to be getting a Ghost phone and then upgrading to a Ghost computer soon, because I am going to unplug from the Matrix. And you can follow me along on my journey. So mark37.com/CDM is where you want to go to do that. Find the webinar, sign up for the webinar, and learn everything you need to know to get started. And then you can also sign up for a free 30-minute consultation on privacy there at mark37.com/CDM. But I'm looking forward to it. And I have been worried about privacy for some time. So I'm going to be taking the plunge and changing my life and unplugging from the Matrix. And I'm really looking forward to it. So maybe you can join me.
A warm welcome here at the National Press Club. Welcome to the journalists. Welcome to the Embra team. And welcome to the other guests that we have here. Going to announce, and as some of you guessed it right when they came in, the first E2 order by an American operator. And that operator is Avelo. We believe this is really a strategic shift to unlock profitability for the customer. I'm very pleased that we have Andrew Levy here as the CEO of Avelo, and I'm very pleased to give the stage to share a little bit more about what Avelo is going to do with the E2 195. Thank you very much.
Couldn't be more excited to be here as part of this historic announcement. We have such a great cultural fit as companies. So we're very, very excited to be Embraer's newest customer. We launched our airline in April of 21, and our target is focusing on small secondary airports of large metro areas. We've carried over 8 million customers since we started on 63,000 flights. And we've done all these things with 1,200 of the greatest crew members I could ever imagine having. And many of them are here with me today. This is the right airplane for us. It's going to open up opportunities for us that no other aircraft can serve. The best thing about the airplane, of course, is you will not find a middle seat on this airplane. It doesn't exist. We won't have any to offer. It's going to be the best cabin in the United States, and we're so excited about that. This is going to elevate our experience to the highest level, and we think our customers are absolutely going to love the airplane.
Life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
Welcome back to the Skiff. Let's talk about a few stories, if you don't mind. Let me just bring up this share screen thing here. So there was a disturbing, incident in that a hack happened to Peter Thiel's Dialogue group, which is a group of, elite personalities who were going to meet to discuss things on the menu like that were World War III and some other stuff. Surviving the Apocalypse, I think, was one of them. So Peter Thiel is obviously owns Palantir, which is a big U.S. government AI contractor, was part of the PayPal mafia in the beginning with Elon Musk and Reid Hoffman and others. And the hack had 200 and something names that came out. And the Secretary of the Army, Driscoll, was on there. I find this really disturbing, and we're going to investigate and maybe get a comment from the Pentagon on this and write about it. But why would the Secretary of the Army be going to an elite meeting called Dialogue, which also has a dating service to find, high-level women? Why would he be going there? Or men, I should say. Peter Thiel is gay. But why would he be going there as a Secretary of the Army? I mean, he works for us, or does he work for the elites? So we're going to investigate this and try to get a response from the Pentagon. So stay tuned for that going forward. This is a really disturbing story. It's on the headline on CDM right now. So the history, 100 years ago, was the Armenian Genocide, which led to the really gave Hitler the idea about the Jewish genocide. I mean, almost 2 million Armenian Christians were literally just slaughtered, made to force march down to the Syrian desert. And that's why there's so many Armenians in Beirut, because those are the survivors of the 150,000 that survived from the 2 million march down to the Syrian desert. They just marched them until they died, threw them off cliffs, threw babies off cliffs, stabbed them, beat them, killed them. And it's really horrific. So that story has been percolating over the decades, and Turkey's tried to deny it. It was done under the Young Turks, the Ottoman Empire. And Turkey has always tried to distance itself from that. And the Israelis have been supporting them and trying to keep that from becoming labeled a genocide, because they didn't want any attention off the Holocaust. But now, in recent days, Israel, because of the tensions with Turkey, they both want to be hegemons in the Middle East. We've been reporting on that. Multiple videos we've shown earlier on the show, earlier this week or last week. And Israel came out and said, yeah, it was a genocide, and it was done for really political reasons. And I have to be honest, I don't know this gentleman. He's an Armenian System of a Down. The lead singer, Serge Tankian, blasted Netanyahu government, F you, for exploiting Armenian genocide for political gain. I'm just going to play this really interesting story. We've been on the Armenian issue, you know, for some time, and speaking with Pastor Dell on the unification of Christians globally. Armenia is the first Christian country. We were there last year on the ground reporting. We've done a lot of good reporting from there, but this is his response.
For many years, Israel's government used AIPAC to lobby the U.S. Congress to not recognize the Armenian genocide, to prevent Congress from recognizing the Armenian genocide, due to their relationship with Turkey, their intelligence sharing with Turkey, etc. Today, the Netanyahu cabinet decided to recognize the Armenian genocide of 1915, the genocide that led to Hitler thinking that he could do what he could do to the Jews in the 1930s and 40s. The fact that this government is already committing genocide in Gaza and Lebanon, decided to recognize the genocide of my grandparents, is the worst fucking thing that they could have done to Armenians, by using our history, our genocide, our pain to their political advantage. Fuck you.
So there you go. Interesting. That story is up on CDM.press, and we'll continue to report on it. I thought it was important to highlight. All right. Miles Guo. This is on our New York paper, the Manhattan.press, has been sentenced to 30 years in prison. You probably famously remember him on Steve Bannon's War Room with the jingoistic "Let's Take Down the CCP." I admit it was a great song and great videos, but the problem is, and we know the truth here, I won't give our sources, but there's been a debate. Well, he was just trying to hit the CCP, and therefore, you know, the globalists are coming after him. No, he was actually stealing millions from his followers and taking money they gave him to confront the CCP on his own personal lifestyle. So I did a quick video on this. I'll just play this for you right now.
Billionaire Miles Guo was sentenced today to 30 years in prison. This follows his conviction for massive fraud inside his movement to bring down the Chinese Communist Party. Guo famously teamed up with Steve Bannon on his War Room show at Real America's Voice to take on the CCP. Let's Take Down the CCP was a jingoistic song that gained fame several years ago on the show, but quickly disappeared once Guo's fraud was apparent. There are allegations from Roger Stone that Bannon, RAV, and other influencers took money from CCP operatives as per court documents. Florida Congressman Ana Paulina Luna posted on her X account several days ago that influencer disclosure is coming. White House operative Dan Scavino seconded her post. It is unclear who will be named in the coming disclosure. We will report more on this story at cdm.press as it is Chinese.
So there you go. Really, really, really interesting. And we will follow what's the disclosures with Ana Paulina Luna, Congresswoman out of Florida, as well as Dan Scavino. And we've got Roger Stone on here in the second hour. I'm sure he will opine on this subject. So stay tuned for that. Let's look at what else we have here today. This one, Lisa Cook, the Supreme Court said she can stay in office, at least temporarily, at the Federal Reserve. This was, as you know, Trump tried to fire her, and he said it's his prerogative because of her alleged mortgage fraud, which she is now being, adjudicated over in court. And the Supreme Court said we have to wait for that process. So that's a significant one. I'll have Tom Teague on tomorrow to discuss all of this, and also the AI, we've got to really stay in front of this AI thing because it's huge and it's really going to transform your life, guarantee you. So wait for us on that. All right, that's all I've got. I'm going to take another break as far as stories. We're going to talk about J.D. Vance and what's going on with Roger Stone and the midterms coming up and election fraud and Nixon and Steve Bannon, Real America's Voice, Miles Guo, all of that in the second hour with Roger Stone. I've got a little finish our history lesson on the Beirut blast here after the break, so we'll be right back.
Every day, your data is being tracked, collected, and sold, often without you even realizing it. Big tech companies control your devices, your apps, and the information you share. From your messages to your browsing habits, everything is being monitored and stored. Over time, we've traded privacy for convenience, and most people don't even question it. But what if you could take that control back? That's where Mark 37 comes in. Mark 37 provides privacy-focused phones, laptops, and tablets designed to give you full control over your digital life. With secure systems, expert support, and simple tools, they make it easier to step away from constant tracking and data collection. Because privacy isn't just a feature, it's a fundamental choice. It's about protecting your data, your freedom, and your future. Take back control of your digital life with Mark 37.
Pandemic, we can never be caught unprepared again. And so many Americans, when COVID hit, they had nothing in the house. Stores were shut down, and doctors' offices were shut down. And even if doctors prescribed drugs, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, pharmacists wouldn't fill the prescriptions. That was a nightmare.
Now the situation is much worse. We have these horrible supply chain problems. In our emergency medical kit at the Wellness Company, we have 8 prescription drugs that are all potentially life-saving.
Most people have died with COVID. They died in the hospital because they didn't receive early treatment.
Every American family should have one of these.
I can tell you the Wellness Company kit is the answer.
With my 35 years of experience, our team at US Asset Management can deliver professional investment management, financial planning to help you target your goals, and even specialized divorce financial analysis if you need it. We are here to help you make better decisions with your money. Call US Asset Management today, and let's get to work in your financial future.
Okay, welcome back to the Skiff. We are going to do a quick video here on the Beirut explosion. I can't find the original video that we were going to finish with the evidence of. Let me just take a minute. So, several years ago, there was an explosion in the port at Beirut. It was massive and it destroyed the Christian sector, essentially. And many people think it was on purpose. There was a lot of evidence to that effect. We'll go into it more, maybe from Beirut itself. We'll go down to the blast area soon and when we're going to be there and discuss this and do some live streaming. But the focus is that it destroyed the Christian sector, and many think it was intentional because Lebanon has been attacked over and over as a Christian country and trying to stop that country from being successful. And you're seeing it again to today. So what I'm going to do now is just play a little bit of this whole thing, and then you can take a look at it. And oh, here it is. Here, I found the one I was looking for. Hold on. All right, so here we go. We're going to play a little bit of this, and then I'll bring Mr. Stone in. But we'll be in Beirut here shortly. So this is the remainder of, or not going to play all of it, but the remainder of that video that we started a couple days ago is just your history lesson for today.
Istibaq. انتركوا لفترة طويلة وانفجروا. بس كيف انفجروا؟
معي إلى جانب أحد المصابين العمال الذين كانوا يعملون في المرفأ وهو شاهد وهو مصاب وأنا استوقفته قليلاً هو متجه إلى المستشفى
دولة هذه مفرقعات صلى كذا سنة هون شو وصل نار كيف وصلت على المستشفى ما حدا بيعرف بلشت على الخفيف بعدين قمت لما وصلت على المزبوط على 2000 طن قامت الدنيا كلها هيك بتملك فيها
حجم الانفجار اللي صار ثالث انفجار غير نووي حصل بمحل من المحلات بتشوف الدائرة تقريبا شي 250-300 متر بتشوف عم الكريتر يلي هو 40 أو 50 متر تقريبا بتلاقيها كتير كبير يعني عم نحكي 200 شهيد 3 مفقودين 6500 جريح 300 ألف مشرد شو عملت الدولة؟ زيرو
الموضوع مش انه عابر نهار او نهارين عم نحكي عن 6-7 سنوات ومسؤولين متكررين وكل واحد منهم مسؤول ما في حدا يقول انا ما بعرف
بدمج الجهل مع الفساد مع عدم الكفاءة للمسؤولين If you don't know, ask القانون لا يحمي المغفل يعني you should know
هيدا بيتي أنا اللي كنت هون حد علمك صار الانفجار وحصل اللي حصل يا خيي وتوفت عائلتي بيتي هون آخر طابق جيت لقيتهم كل شيء على الأرض
وما بعرف شو صار. هذا بيتا، هيدا بيتا. ليك طلع هيدا منظر.
فعليا كمية الناس اللي بتعرف بالمواد المتفجرة على البور كتير واسعة. بيصير السؤال ليش ما نعمل شيء بيكبر علامة الاستفهام أكتر.
هو كان كتير يحب يشتغل بهيدا الجنينة ونتركها مثل ما هو بحب. بيصيروا يقولوا لك الوجع بيخلق كبير وبيصغر، ومعلش طولوا بالكم وبكره بترجعوا بتتأقلموا ترجعوا على شغلكم. لا، كل يوم أبشع من يوم وكل يوم أفزع من يوم. ضايعة فاضية بلاهم. هون كنا نسهر، هون كنا نقعد، هون كنا نرتاح بعد النهار الطويل، بعد الشغل، نتساير، نخبر أخبارنا لبعض. فهلأ عم بيصير نفس الشيء، عم بيجي أقعد هون وأسهر هون وخبر أخبار، بس هو ما عم بيخبر.
المسؤول هو اللي ما بلغ شو فيه بقلب العنبر، يلي هو بيعرف شو فيه بقلب العنبر ومع ذلك شو عمل؟ ما كلف خاطره حتى يرفع التليفون ويدق أو ينزل لتحت. المسؤول هو يلي كان مفروض يقولن أنه ما تفتحوا الباب، لأنه إذا فتحتوا الباب رح يفوت أكسجين أكتر، وبالتالي إذا الحريقة كانت عم بتموت رح تولع أكتر، وبالتالي هول جماعة تبخرت أشلائهم بسبب جبن هول الناس يلي لهل هاي اللحظة بعضهم عم بينكروا مسؤوليتهم عن تخزين بضاعة كانت موجودة بحرمهم.
يعني ما بعرف إذا ناطرين الحيطان بعد تنتلي صور أكتر ليصير في إنه ضحايا أكتر، ما بعرف شو ناطرين. أنا سيرفايفر باي لوك، بس كنت مضطرة سافر. آخر حدا شفته هو رامي، وقفني على البوابة تحت، قال لي سيزان، تلا رامي، قال لي ليه مستعجلة؟ تلا لا لا خيي، بدي روح، بدي خلص أموري، بدي أعمل فحص البي سي آر وبدي سافر. شفتهم كلهم، هذا اللي بعزي، بس إنه تسافر عشي وتيجي عشي تاني مدينة وزملاء وفوج، يعني واحد بغض النظر عن شغلي واتنين، بس بور مثل مغارط علي بابا في 6000 حرامي، معقول مش عارفين شو فيه؟
المحققين شاكين بشي بأنه هيدي الفجوة اللي كانت معمولة فجوة مقصودة، وبأنه اللي عملها بهدف أنه يصير يسرق.
في كيس واضح تقريباً كله فاضي
وعم ينسحب منهم، كان رياض كميات كبيرة فلت.
خي في 2700 طن من الأمونيا النيتريت موجودة عندك. أول شي بعمله أنا لما لقي في فتحة فوت بعت الكيس بديهيات.
1950 كيس من أصل 2700 كيس مخزقين بحسب قسيمة الإدخال.
Wasn't a product that was developed and to sell, really. Mm-hmm. What it really was a journey to get me well after my experience trying to immigrate and get married to an American citizen in order to go to get my green card. Towards the end, they send you for a medical, And that's where they sat me down and gave me 16 vaccines in one sitting. At the time, I knew when I was going through it that it's probably not good, but I didn't realize that I'm about to go through the worst health experience of my life. Mm-hmm. And that's when I went on this journey and understand that nutrition is actually your medicine. I've always heard the old people say your food's in your garden, but we didn't get it. And your body is always trying to heal itself. I mean, you know, when you cut yourself in a couple of days, it heals. And that is the process of homeostasis. Your body is always trying to, every cell in your body is always healing itself. And just like anything, if you bake a cake or you build a house, you need the right ingredients to achieve the result. Now, if you don't have the correct nutrition and you're not eating the correct food, it's like trying to build a house without bricks. Now, a lot of people, they say, what does nuclear do? Nuclear itself does nothing. It's not designed to do anything. Your body does the work. It gives your body all the things it needs balanced in, and it works together to deliver the correct nutritional supplement that you need as a human being to function normally.
It's finally here, our second annual mega sale. This sale only comes around once a year, so take advantage of the best offers ever while you can. For example, save 50% on our Giza Dream bed sheets, as low as $29.98. And for the first time ever on TV, MyPillow mattresses and MyPillow mattress toppers as low as $99.98. And you save 50% on our LuxePure six-piece towel sets. Regular $69.98, now only $39.98. And our best-selling standard MyPillows, regular $49.98, on sale for $17.98. Wait on it, mega sale, only $14.98. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use this promo code to take advantage of our second annual mega sale. But wait, there's more. To make the mega sale even more special, when you order right now, your order's going to ship absolutely free.
Welcome back to the Skiff. You know, I've had this feeling, and the focus of our show is morphing into, we'll be in Beirut in a few weeks, but our sense is this world is not going to be saved just by patriotism, but by faith. And we are working on joining a lot of the Christian communities around the world, and that's happening. You heard Pastor Jake Dell talk about that. But providentially, I had Roger Stone on today to discuss, because I saw his post on J.D. Vance and Nixon, and I found that fascinating. But something happened last night. Miles Guo was sentenced, and I want to bring Roger in now to discuss. Thank you for joining me this morning, Roger. Appreciate your time.
Todd, great to be with you again.
So, as I said, it's really providential I had you on the show today, because what happened yesterday? Mr. Guo got sentenced, right?
Yeah, I think this is a very significant development. I mean, Miles Guo was the funder for Steve Bannon. Miles Guo's money was essentially controlled by a man named William Ji, who is quite clearly a functionary of the Chinese Communist Party. It's on his own LinkedIn profile. He, by the way, is on the loose. He was charged in this same billion-dollar fraud, in which Steve Bannon himself is an unindicted co-conspirator. Now, I have demonstrated online with great detail that both Guo and Bannon were involved in a crypto fraud, in a gold fraud. It is my contention that the money they were playing with was CCP money funneled to them by William G. And at the same time, Guo himself perpetuated a billion-dollar fraud in the name of a free China, in the name of opposition to the CCP. So there's a lot of education going on out there today as I try to remake these same points. This is, of course, the same Steve Bannon that 1,900 emails released by the U.S. Justice Department demonstrated was coaching Jeffrey Epstein on the rehabilitation of his public image. There's strong indications in those released emails that Bannon visited Epstein's island. Hasn't denied that, pretty much solidly proven in those emails. So I think this is all about exposing who Steve Bannon is. It's one thing to go on a podcast and claim to be a Trump supporter. It's something else to be scheming behind the scenes, both to defraud people in the name of a free China, to line your own pockets. Bannon himself received somewhere between $37 and $54 million, according to the trial records. And at the same time, scheming with Jeffrey Epstein to bring down Donald Trump under the 25th Amendment.
Well, you know, there's a whole argument, I guess, narratives on both sides being created. On one side, you had, well, Miles Guo is a freedom fighter. He was fighting the Chinese Communist Party. But, you know, we have sources that I can tell you for sure that there was fraud going on inside that effort. So I think the scales have tipped. I don't think you could ignore what came out yesterday with all the evidence and people whose lives were destroyed, who gave money they thought were trying to help, you know, save China.
I agree with your assessment. Look, and I understand that we can only say here the things that we can absolutely prove, mm-hmm. but I think I have done that today.
All right, let's move on. J.D. Vance and Nixon. I found that fascinating. Tell us what your thoughts are on that, please.
Well, it's heartening for me. Look, I've written two different books, Nixon's Secret, The Inside Story of Watergate, the Nixon tapes and the pardon, and a second book, Tricky Dick, The Rise and Fall and Rise of Richard Milhouse Nixon. You can get both of them by going to stonezone.com in the store there. You get a signed copy. But unfortunately, I've written a number of books, as you know. My book, for example, on the Kennedy assassination became a New York Times bestseller. Public interest in Watergate is surprisingly low because, unfortunately, due to the fact that we had a monolithic media at the time, three national TV networks, a handful of national news magazines, really no national newspapers yet. This is before the internet, of course. So the New York Times, the Washington Post are strong regional newspapers. They're not really national newspapers. And the story of Watergate is kind of a set narrative. Everyone agrees. It was a constitutional crisis. Nixon was a crook. He engaged in a cover-up. Case closed. There's never been any serious reexamination of those facts, except for by a handful of people. James Rosen, now with Newsmax, formerly Fox, Jim Haugen, who wrote, I think, the most important book on the subject, Inside Hidden Agenda, my books. But until J.D. Vance, the Vice President of the United States, speaking at the Nixon Library, said flatly, and he's right, Nixon was brought down by the same deep state conspirators who attempted to bring down Donald Trump. That caused an explosion of the reexamination of the facts surrounding the Watergate break-in, those including the fact that declassified documents prove to us today that the Central Intelligence Agency knew about the break-in in advance, that they infiltrated the burglar team. Four of the eight Watergate burglars were on the active payroll of the CIA at the time of the break-in, that James McCord and E. Howard Hunt not only knew each other, but had worked together closely in the CIA, that John Dean's testimony to the Watergate prosecutors and his testimony to the Senate Watergate Committee and his claims in his own book didn't match at all, but he was never prosecuted for that. The fact that there was never any evidence that Nixon himself knew about or approved the Watergate break-in. And indeed, to this day, we're not absolutely certain what the Watergate burglars could have been looking for. Nixon was leading in 49 states in the polls at that time. He was on the cusp of the greatest electoral landslide in history, what would have been the purpose of the Watergate break-in. Then, of course, there's a great book by Phil Stanford, which I highly recommend, White House Call Girl. His theory, which I think is pretty thoroughly documented, was that there was a call girl ring servicing the DNC, that John Dean had his own connections to it and was anxious to get those records in order to hide his trail. Mm-hmm. Do you know this? That Dean, when he published his book of the definitive transcripts of all of the tapes, he conveniently leaves out the tapes in March of 1973, where he urges Nixon to engage in illegal activities, and he hides his own pre-knowledge of the Watergate break-in and his role in covering it up. So I think that the vice president has done a huge service here by opening this question, and here's why. Until you can get by the question of Watergate, you can't examine Nixon's actual record in office and the fact that he signed a strategic arms limitation agreement with the Soviets, that he played the Chinese and the Soviets off against each other at a time that China was a dirt poor agrarian society, little technological capability, very little indoor plumbing, no electrification in the rural areas. They were not a threat to this nation. It is only later when Bill Clinton, followed by George W. Bush, gives them most favored nation trading status, that they become the great danger to us that they are today. Then we can go on and on. The desegregation of the public schools, the formation of the Environmental Protection Agency at a time when there is no protection for our environment. So he has a laudable record, civil rights, war and peace, restructuring government, but it never gets examined because it gets lost in the ashes of Watergate. So I think Vice President has done us a great service here.
Completely agree. And that story's ongoing, so we'll see what happens. And on that note, elections, there seems to be an awakening in the country that the elections are completely corrupt. And finally, some of the people who didn't want to see that are admitting that, even on the left. My question to you is there a focus, the right kind of focus at the national level to fix this, in your opinion?
That's a very interesting question. I don't know whether it is fair to say that those efforts died with Tulsi Gabbard leaving the position of Director of National Intelligence, or whether they are ongoing. There is no question that she was very focused on getting clarity on the question of the security and integrity of electronic voting machines, particularly those that were connected to the internet, whether there was or was not foreign involvement by either Venezuela or China, also clearly focused on the massive dump of paper mail-in ballots simultaneously at about 3 o'clock in the morning in multiple states. Whether that investigation still goes forward under ODNI, or whether it goes forward by the Justice Department, just is an open question to me that I cannot answer. I was disappointed by the Supreme Court decision yesterday that says that a ballot can be counted that has not been received by Election Day. Evidently, Election Day does not mean Election Day. But by and large, the Supreme Court decisions regarding mail-in ballots up until this time have been fairly favorable. I also think that the Supreme Court decision on whether race can be used as a factor for the congressional redistricting is a significant advantage to the Republicans, because the gerrymandering on the basis of race that has gone on in states like California and New York and Pennsylvania and Illinois can no longer go forward.
Well, we can hope. And I think media is part of that whole process. And that's why we're focused on elections with, as you know, Chris Gleason and others. Roger, you've been through a lot over the last decade, but you're kind of like the tortoise. You're continuing just, and you're putting out so much content. And I saw an article recently, Roger Stone is back. I don't know if that was Politico or whatever. I mean, you seem to be on a mission. What is that mission?
As I think many people, no, although it was 7 years ago, it doesn't seem like that. when I was put through the ringer and the Mueller witch hunt, and when it, we now know exculpatory evidence was withheld from my trial attorneys at trial, and no misstatement I made before Congress was relevant. None of it was material. In other words, we now know there was no Russian collusion to cover up or to lie about. But in that process, as you know, Todd, my wife and my family, we lost everything. My home, my car, my health insurance, my life insurance, my savings for almost a 2-year period of time. My right to free speech, because I was gagged for about 18 months. Couldn't write, couldn't speak on any subject. So I renewed my faith. I returned to the church. And like Job, now I'm trying to recoup seven times everything that I lost. So working very hard to do it. But thanks to the good Lord, I'm able to earn again, to work again. So whether it is my syndicated radio show every day at WABCradio.com at 8 p.m., you can listen anywhere in the world at WABCradio.com, 7 p.m. Eastern. Or whether it is my Substack, which you can find at stonecoldtruth.com, or whether it is my everyday website at stonezone.com. And I'm still trying to crank out this and finalize this book on the assassination attempt on President Ronald Reagan, for which I think the public record is insufficient. And candidly, I think Bill O'Reilly's book, which candidly he didn't write, never, I'm not sure he even read it, but he definitely didn't write it. I think leaves a lot out. So yeah, I've got a lot of projects going. I'm working very hard just to catch up to where I was. But I'm grateful to God that I can do that.
Roger, thanks so much for your time today. Appreciate you coming on last minute. Take care. We'll have you back. All right, ciao.
Every day, your data is being tracked, collected, and sold. Often without you even realizing it. Big tech companies control your devices, your apps, and the information you share. From your messages to your browsing habits, everything is being monitored and stored. Over time, we've traded privacy for convenience, and most people don't even question it. But what if you could take that control back? That's where Mark 37 comes in. Mark 37 provides privacy-focused phones, laptops, and tablets designed to give you full control over your digital life. With secure systems, expert support, and simple tools, they make it easier to step away from constant tracking and data collection. Because privacy isn't just a feature, it's a fundamental choice. It's about protecting your data, your freedom, and your future. Take back control of your digital life with Mark 37.
And by the way, I wanted to say I'm starting my journey with Sean. I'm going to be getting a Ghost phone and then upgrading to a Ghost computer soon, because I am going to unplug from the Matrix. And you can follow me along on my journey. So mark37.com/CDM is where you want to go to do that. Find the webinar, sign up for the webinar, and learn everything you need to know to get started. And then you can also sign up for a free 30-minute consultation on privacy there at mark37.com/CDM. But I'm looking forward to it, and I have been worried about privacy for some time, so I'm going to be taking the plunge and changing my life and unplugging from the Matrix, and I'm really looking forward to it. So maybe you can join me.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Ira Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio, because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, CPAC, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
Do you already have your investments with Fidelity? I'm David Cross with U.S. Asset Management. Did you know that you can assign your investment management to my team and put my 35 years of experience to work for you? You simply assign us as your investment manager and you keep the same username and password. Professional management, and you get to work with someone who shares your values. Call U.S. Asset Management today and put us to work for you.
All right, welcome back to the Skiff. Want to give a shout out to David Cross. He is a patriot. If you need somebody to talk to, you know, you're getting a divorce, you're selling your business, your inheritance issues, portfolio management. How do I navigate these markets? Give David a call at usassetmanagement.com. That's us-am.com. Just give him a call and talk to him. We've had really great feedback with people working for him. So we want to just give him kudos, and if you're in that position, give him a call. On another note, I want to talk about our New York site, the Manhattan.press. You can go there, the Manhattan.press. Let me just throw that up as far as the name of the paper. Let me find it. One second. There we go. The Manhattan.press. You can find that. And then go to the top. This is our business in New York channel. You can, New York Northeastern Politics channel. But if you go to the top menu, it's the Manhattan bestsellers. We put a lot of work into this. This is our response to the New York Times bestsellers list, which has been known for bias. You know, Alex Jones' book sold a lot, didn't show up. a lot of that kind of stuff just didn't show up where it should be. But we have put a lot of, we do this weekly. It's updated weekly. This last one was updated. It's about to be updated again. The woman who did this had a baby, and so it's been a little slow. But you should see a new one come out soon. But we have editor's picks, children, editor's picks, adult nonfiction, adult fiction, politics, history, young adult fiction and nonfiction, children's fiction and nonfiction. So if you just want a book, let's say, on politics, and there's liberal books and there's conservative books. It's just the best-selling books. And interestingly enough, the U.S. Constitution has been the one that sells a lot. If you want to buy one of these books, go to the checkout, and it takes you to the CDM bookstore. And buy your books from us. Don't buy them from Amazon. You know, we make a couple bucks off each book. The prices are comparable, and you support free media that way. But this is really, the Manhattan bestsellers list is the best bestsellers list out there. I'm confident of that. There's no bias in it whatsoever, just based on the numbers. But I'm going to give you another idea. If you have a trip coming up that you want a great book, check out my book, Currency. It has over 500 reviews on Amazon, very high ratings, and I'll just read you a little bit. Economic thriller, incredible story of power, romance, and revenge in international finance spanning three centuries. The issues could not be more timely. The first volume, the second one is Sugar, the third is Motherland, and then there's a standalone volume called Delta, and then we're writing the fifth novel called Deep. The first volume of a series that captures the reader with a page-turning adventure while it addresses head-on the most pressing and intense global economic, military, and political issues of our time. Weaves historical adventures of the U.S. Founding Fathers with modern-day hero Connor Murray. Fate forces Murray to navigate events that play on the world stage. And if you love a good adventure story on both the personal and international levels, or if you are concerned about how the United States' current economic challenges could play out for the country in a very real way, Currency is a must-read. So I want to throw that at you as far as for a trip, this, or for someone who has everything, it'd be a great gift. Father's Day, late Father's Day, birthdays, whatever. please check it out. All right. So that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow I'm going to be traveling, and I get off the plane and I'm going to have to do the show from the airport. So bear with us tomorrow if we're a little late or some funky stuff goes on. But we got Pete Blaber tomorrow, and Tom Teague is going to, we're really into this AI thing and what's going on at the Fed, and Tom is going to deliver, but we've got Tom Teague and then Pete Blaber on Ukraine SITREP in the second hour. So be there tomorrow or be square. It's going to be a great show. Thank you for joining us today, Monday through Friday on the Skiff Eastern. And also tomorrow evening, we'll have the Georgia show. So a lot going on. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you.